So how should society deal with people who do bad things? The answer to that question has been in flux ever since an eye for an eye gave way to turn the other cheek. The history of criminal justice in the United States has often been described as a pendulum swinging back and forth between retribution and rehabilitation, propelled in each instance by ever-evolving forces such as politics, demographics, economic trends, social sentiments, and, of course, crime rates. Hi, I'm John Schwanes, and on this week's program, we'll do our best to figure out the direction in which that pendulum is swinging at this moment at the State House. For reasons we'll explore in a moment, that's not as easy as you might think. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue researchers are advancing manufacturing industries by developing 3D additive methods, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.
At the top of the show, I noted that our approach to criminal justice has been likened to a pendulum. At one point, the prevailing public opinion will emphasize rehabilitation and the reintroduction of incarcerated offenders into society through diversion programs, educational offerings, and early release initiatives. Then, over time, attitudes will shift, giving rise to harsher penalties, mandatory minimum sentences, and habitual offender laws. Determining at any given moment not only where we are, but also where we're headed can be tough, especially since the metaphorical pendulum seems to be swinging faster than ever. Here in Indiana, for example, lawmakers adopted sweeping sentencing reforms during the 2013, 14, and 15 legislative sessions, and those revisions represented the first major overhaul of the state's criminal code in three decades. Now, not even 3 years after the latest changes were fully implemented, some, both inside and outside the General Assembly, are calling for a reversal of course. Joining me to discuss the rules of physics, or more accurately, the rules of political physics, are Republican Senator Jim Merritt of Indianapolis, Madison County Sheriff and former Democratic State Representative Scott Mellinger, David Powell, Executive Director of the Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Council, and Bernice Corley, Executive Director of the Indiana Public Defender Council. I thank you all for being here. I'm confused, this pendulum notion here. I never was good at physics. But there seem to be so many cross currents right now at the federal level. Congress doesn't agree on anything, and yet they were able to agree on sentencing reform, first major reform at the federal level in 8 years. President Trump signed it, First Step Act, which promises to release potentially thousands of people, offenders across the country, earlier than they might have otherwise. You have Ban the Box, where employers might not know about people's criminal past. Here it seems that we're moving the opposite with registries for all felons, perhaps, that are more public and more visible than has been the case in the past. There seems to be a pushback against some of the reforms. Sheriff, where is this pendulum? What's the public? You deal with the public in all its shapes, sizes, and descriptions. Where's the sentiment right now?
Well, I think the sentiment with the general public is that as long as we keep criminals locked up, they're happy. In my world, we're dealing just, 92 sheriffs in the state and honestly across the country. The jails are bursting at the seams in terms of being overpopulated.
Yours among them, right?
Yes, ours is one of the worst in the state. Department of Corrections, they also have issues with population and trying to save money. Selfishly, what really caused us some problems recently was the move for the Department of Corrections to stop accepting level 6 felons. And the reason I mention that, not just selfishly because we're overpopulated in our jail, but level 6 felons, after they're sentenced, many of them could go through rehabilitation efforts. County jails aren't built and aren't funded to have the programs needed for that, where State Department of Corrections are much better versed and they're much better funded to be able to provide that for offenders.
And that came, of course, out of the reforms that I alluded to. One of the things, there was a move from 4 criminal classifications to 6. Murder is in its own category. Mm-hmm. And then the least, for those who maybe not have this, as many brushes with the law as you, or not, I'm not pointing at myself, level 6 would be the least serious offenses that were created as a part of that. You agree? People, as long as they just want to lock them up and throw away the key, do they realize, though, that that's, they're going to have to shell out more money, perhaps, as taxpayers
to pay
for it?
I think they do. I think the whole goal is to be safe in our communities. When we talked about the aforementioned reform, that came actually out of a lunch that I had with a judge in Marion County so many years ago, that he had individuals who've been charged with crimes coming in and being convicted, and he had to have the 3x5 cards to match what the punishment would be. And he said, Jim, we need to take a look at this. I filed a summer study committee request, and then we started working on it. But these reforms...
It was a multi-year proposition.
Absolutely, an enormous study. But it's my opinion that the legislature has to continue to look at all of our laws, including our criminal laws, to make sure that we're going the right direction.
You know, we may do with the last set of our criminal, the last version, I should say, of the criminal code in Indiana for, as I mentioned, almost 30 years, and now people are already itching to change it. What's happened here from your perspective?
And that itch is being satisfied. But I'd like to start, if you wouldn't mind, with the idea about communities being okay with locking away people for a safer community. I think there's a lot of common sense in our communities that say we cannot incarcerate our way to safety. And I think there are a lot of communities where new jails are being considered to be built, where there are a lot of citizens that are saying, I don't want my tax dollars used this way. We want community treatment. And I have to say 1006 was initially designed to keep level 6 felons or nonviolent felons in their communities getting treatment, hopefully getting work and training and things of that nature. So I will say I don't think that's really what people want. But the problem is ever since 1006 passed, starting in 2015 to now, there have been almost 20, I think actually over 20 new crimes or enhancements since then.
More charges certainly are being filed at the state level. And you mentioned the crowding and the prospect of new construction. I think what maybe 2/3 of the counties in the state now have population problems. 4 or 5 are under construction projects underway, and I think 30 are considering some sort of construction project to ease the pinch. All right, we're around this side of the table now. Where are you on the whole lock them up and throw away the key? Is that what the public wants, or is it in fact the appetite right now for more rehabilitation and more diversion?
Well, first of all, what prosecutors want and what law enforcement wants is a safe state. We don't want people committing crimes. We take no pleasure in prosecuting anyone. The General Assembly, you know, passes the laws, and it's our job to enforce them. If someone commits a violent crime and they're held accountable in a there are times when a prison sentence is appropriate or jail time is appropriate. You know, when 1006, all this stuff came down, I've been involved with this from the beginning, and Bernice's team, formerly Larry's team, and IPAC wrote most of the language. And to say that criminal reform has stopped...
Referring to Larry Landis.
Yeah, Larry Landis at the Public Defender's
Council. Predecessor. Right. She's only the second person to occupy that position.
Third.
Somebody snuck in there. Larry lied to me all those years.
We wrote most of that reform, and to say that we've stopped reform is inaccurate. We're still in a state of reform. The big focus now is how do we deal with the treatment options that aren't available to local level. I was the only no vote on reform that came out, and it wasn't that I opposed what we were doing, because we had disproportionate sentences. There's a lot of good work that was done and is effective and is still in place. What I said, and I believe I was accurate, was there was a false premise at the state level that there were resources available at the local level to deal with this increase in number. Because as a former prosecutor for 20 years at a local level at a poor county, I knew we didn't have treatment, and I knew jails weren't designed to provide treatment. And I knew that not sending the level sixes to DOC, they were going to end up at the county jail. Some of these folks have multiple convictions, and the only option left is incarceration in those cases, you know. So the problem is we are very inadequately staffed and under-resourced top to bottom in public health at the local level to provide treatment services that are needed. And that's what we're working on. We continue to work on that with evidence-based decision-making, with the Supreme Court and the legislature. That's probably a 20 to 50-year process to fix that. In the meantime, DOC's numbers are where they wanted to be. There were three numbers at the end of 2015 done by LSA, ARS, and DOC, saying what their prison population would be as a result of that.
DOC, we've been able to close a facility.
Well, DOC's, DOC's number,
just pushing
DOC,
it to
well,
locals,
DOC's
right?
current number is below all of those projections. So if your goal was to lower the adult prison population in DOC, they met that in spades.
Unless you count level six people who are in.
Well, DOC was part of that equation.
Right. Well, let's back up. Everybody, I think, mentioned 1006, and we've referred to this. So let's for those who don't follow it as closely, help me. We'll do a real quick 10-second summary. That was a long effort, bipartisan effort, to basically, as I mentioned before, tweak the criminal code. Some sentences for violent crimes were enhanced. The idea was, though, correct me if I'm wrong, for level six offenders, a lot of drug offenders, nonviolent offenders, the idea was to get them treatment, mental health treatment, and get them closer to their families,
correct.
Which is the idea of having them perhaps in local jails. Mm-hmm. So that was 10 seconds more or less. So the DOC's population, if you count it just as who's specifically behind bars under state control, okay, they've gone down. But as you mentioned, you've seen an incredible increase.
That's right, and I agree with Dave. I'll tell you, there were some good things that came out of 1006. There's no question. But when you look at the big picture and you look long term at moving thousands of offenders to do their sentences locally, the state did provide some funding to community corrections, and more funding than they had ever provided. But it was maybe half enough or less, because you're looking at case managers at community corrections who monitor maybe 100 offenders per case manager or more. You can't monitor an offender effectively with those kind of numbers. So there needs to be more money put towards community corrections and those programs, and that can work, but that money, there wasn't enough money provided. Number two, there simply aren't enough therapists and specialists in the state of Indiana or maybe in the country to take on that surge of a population who needs treatment immediately. And I think that's one thing that could have been discovered if it would have been researched thoroughly enough, because we are so underserved right now with the numbers of therapists and specialists that we need, that we've really created more of a problem.
So instead of mental health, basically, it's warehousing at the local level, as opposed to, exactly. And many of these people haven't even been tried or convicted. They just can't afford to get out on
there. Let me share a couple numbers with you. Our top 10 felonies are all level six. And if you take
in terms of numbers.
Numbers of filings. Our top 10 felonies, and six of them are substance abuse related. If you take our top 10 felonies and our top 10 misdemeanors, it's almost 56% of everything that's filed criminally. All those folks stay local. And those numbers are increasing dramatically. Our filings are down if you look at 10 years ago. But those 20 crimes are up substantially, and they're unfortunately primarily substance abuse related. And we have a chronic substance abuse problem. And unfortunately, the default often is the county jail for these folks because of the shortage in treatment
providers. Was this a well-intended, I'll look at you since you signed it, was this a well-intended plan to execute the goals of locally based, family-friendly, treatment-based incarceration, or was this just the classic unfunded mandate? Because basically, that's what it's turned out to be, right?
Well, I indeed voted for it in 2 years in a row, and it was a great effort. I think we turned over some stones and understood and learned things. But as with any large piece of legislation / law, it needs to be, you talked about tweak, this needs to be twacked.
We should talk about Senate Bill 20, which was something that's not going to happen this session, but that was your bill, which would have basically rolled everything back to
before
the reforms.
That was my message to the legislature, that this law, because of Recovery Works and because of drug dealers judges able to suspend sentences, there are a lot of different parts of 1006 that need to be looked at on a constant basis. And I believe when the sheriff was in the legislature, we had what was called sunset laws, where laws would be sunsetted or at least looked at in committees. I think the legislature from now on ought to be looking at 1006 on a constant basis, where it needs help, where it needs strength, And
if there's money to fund it, too. I mean, that's
the
other challenge.
That's the thing with Recovery Works. It is about half as much. And that was an estimate. And we should go back and look at the whole issue and shore it up where it needs to be done.
You raised concerns about judicial discretion. And your bill, which, again, isn't going to happen go anywhere this session, would have taken away judges' opportunity to suspend sentences for level 2 through level 4 for people who had a prior.
Yes, right. And that's it. And the whole issue is that the sheriff knows this, when you introduce legislation, you introduce large pieces so you can get discussion going. My whole goal at the end of session would be is keeping drug dealers in jail.
But now I'm confused again. I was just getting to get clarity. Now the pendulum is going crazy again, because this is exactly what the federal law that I mentioned, the reform initiative, was to take the handcuffs, so to speak, off of judges so they could have more discretion. Do judges, I know where you're probably going to come down on this, but clearly you need to, in your mind, I guess judges should have the opportunity to exercise some wisdom or some experience they bring to the bench to suspend sentences where appropriate.
Absolutely. And I want to start by saying all of us, everyone at this table and everyone represented, we're all working for a safer, healthier, prosperous Indiana. And I will say, when you look at judges who are faced with the defendant and know the facts and the circumstances and see the families and know the community support the person may or may not have, they're in the best position to make a decision about sentencing. So I do think judicial discretion is very important, and we should respect that as a state, that the judiciary is a key player and knowledgeable entity when it comes to sentencing. And
so it sounds, maybe this is an oversimplification, that everybody's dissatisfied with the reform of a few years ago, but for different reasons. Some people say their jails are bursting at the seams. It's a money issue. Other people say maybe it's a you would say it's a philosophical issue as well. Mm-hmm. David Powell, is it if money had been thrown at this, and in fact people had been in diversion programs or community corrections programs getting mental health, would everybody be happy, do you think? Is this just a matter of opening the loosening the purse strings?
If you want my opinion on what we should do,
that's why you're here.
We do.
You know, I think the ultimate thing we need to do is get a data system from entry into the system to exit in the system so that we can all operate off of fair, objective data.
He had the judge with his 3x5 cards.
The sheriffs have 23 different data systems. On any given day, there are sheriffs in Indiana who do not know who are in their jail. And so we need data, and we don't have it, and most states don't. In fact, no state does. We could lead the nation. We need to spend some money.
Just knowing where everybody is would help that much.
Don't you agree, Bernice? I mean, we need that data so that we know where people are, and then we can begin to assess where the issues are and put money, target money. The problem now is everybody has data. Everybody's in a crisis. Everybody's asking for money, and there's not enough money for everybody.
We've all cited statistics,
right.
And
the policymakers, the General Assembly, the governor, the folks that can write the checks, they need real data that they can trust, that we can all agree is valid, and then you target your priorities and you begin drawing down on it. And we just haven't done that. We're working on it. I think we're several years away from it, but if the General Assembly wanted to write that first check, like Florida, who recently did this, they passed a law to require all criminal justice providers, top to bottom, to develop a singular data system that we could all rely on and look at in terms of outcomes and what's happening. We need that big time in Indiana. And if you're going to write that first check, that's the check I would write if I were in charge.
And I'm not sure that first check will be written. And I'll bring as Exhibit A, perhaps, would be the fact that you and your colleagues across the state, Sheriff, are getting $35 per level 6 inmate per day.
Right.
And I think the cost, you would say, is a lot higher. There was legislation proposed this year that would have bumped it up to $50, I believe.
$55.
And I guess if the budget, who's to say how the budget will turn out? We won't know until the end of April. But there is some modest gain, but not the kind of money. What does it take? No. What do you need to keep people to just be awash financially for you?
I don't believe you can use those calculations to determine that cost, because number one, if you have a jail that's 30 years old or older, it is becoming dysfunctional, and the costs of renovation, repairing, remodeling, or building a new jail have to be factored in there. When you talk about cost per inmate per day, and the Department of Corrections charges us $55 a day if we send someone there or more. And that's where sheriffs feel like we need parity. And that additional $20, all it will do is help us pay bills. It is not going to build more jail space. There's not enough there.
Or
to
get
do
the
that.
Therapist that you said.
So it would help us with programming and treatment. Yes, it would.
And again, money is, in your mind, not the issue. You just want to keep people, drug dealers, locked up, is what it comes down to. Is that as simple as this is?
That is as simple as keeping drug dealers in jail.
And you'd rather have them in jail or with therapy or...
Well, usually drug dealers aren't the ones that are users. It's the drug dealers who are putting the poison in their communities.
All right, so you think that's not the answer, right? Or is it the answer?
Absolutely not the answer. I want to start by saying there was a jail data survey that said 56% of jail population is level 6 pretrial. Okay? That's a data point
we
all know.
These people just can't afford to bond out.
For whatever reason. Okay, so I just want us to be careful that we're not fully blaming 1006 for the jail overpopulation.
And the state would not be paying any reimbursement for those individuals who haven't been tried yet, right? Or would they? I don't want to bog down on that.
The state doesn't pay for pretrial.
Right. Okay, so that's another expense.
So that's a data point we know. So as David said, we are working on pretrial and those sorts of things, but I just want to say this is a bigger conversation, and the 1006 reforms are not fully to blame for the jail overpopulation. And I will say, in terms of drug dealers and crime, DOC has done a study that jobs and education are the best predictors for reducing recidivism. And that's where we really need to be focusing people who are charged and convicted of getting them jobs and education.
Now, given this sort of tough situation now, where are some of the reform initiatives that would have called, for instance, for lowering the age that individuals who are charged with the most violent of offenses, the school shooting in Noblesville, that would have lowered the age where a person could be waived into adult court at 12?
Well, first of all, 1006 did not.
No. I'm saying that's legislation that's being proposed now. But does this pull the plug on that? Because theoretically, that would put a greater burden on the system, especially with younger levels where maybe the need for counseling and therapy is even greater.
There is a national movement that wants to simply do away with juvenile delinquency crimes altogether and stop waivers altogether.
And put everybody in the adult system?
No, just not charge them with crimes. You know, there are folks who say the human brain isn't mature until 30 and everybody has an excuse for their behavior until they turn 30.
Well,
and
so, the court has ruled that we can't.
Coming out of the Noblesville case, right now in Indiana, there are some waivers that can be filed, and there are some direct files. So if you're 17 years old and you commit murder, you can be directly filed into adult court. It's not a juvenile matter. So there's a list of certain violent crimes for 16 and 17-year-olds that if they commit those crimes, they're waived. They can be direct filed or waived. I've looked at the data for last year. Okay, all of Indiana, we had one 14-year-old and two 15-year-olds waived in the entire state.
So it's not an issue.
Well, we had no 12-year-olds, no 13-year-olds. And so the law, though, says that if you're 12 years old and you commit a murder, the court can waive, but it's discretionary, you know, so that it's not an automatic waiver. So what the bill that was proposed would do was add attempted murder, because you have the intent to kill for the 12 and 13-year-olds, to allow the courts to consider that. And in the case of Noblesville, we had a young man who clearly intended to kill two people and shot multiple times, and so that was not an option because the only one it applied to for that age was murder. So you attempted murder, he remains in the juvenile system no matter what, and the victims and the prosecutor at least wanted the option to have that conversation with the court.
We're almost out of time, I'm told. If we pull out your crystal balls, 5 years from now, if we gather for this conversation, we're up to 6,000 inmates now in DOC?
26,000.
26,000?
Yes.
So you just solved half the problem.
I was thinking about the combined.
Oh, that's the combined.
Now,
okay,
if you count who they're paying for in the county jail,
that gets back to the issue of how you count it.
You count
if it's up or down.
Corrections.
All right, let's call everybody, since they are state offenders at level 6. Will those numbers be higher in 5 years or lower? Just once around. I mean, anybody? And I'm getting a rap signal, so it's got to be quick.
Higher.
Anybody?
If we don't make some drastic changes soon, they'll be
it's
higher.
It's going to be even higher.
Agree with the sheriff.
They'll be flat. They've been flat for the last 4 or 5 years. They'll be flat.
That's optimism, right?
They'll be flat.
All right. Thank you very much. I won't say we solved the problem, but certainly we have a better understanding, I think, of what's at stake here. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Jim Merritt of Indianapolis, Madison County Sheriff Scott Mellinger, Dave Powell of the Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Council, and Bernice Corley of the Indiana Public Defenders Council. Most of these United States have legalized marijuana in some form. In Indiana, we just say no. But could that change? On the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Ed, so many proposals on the criminal justice reform front, but nothing is actually going to happen this year. Is that right, this session?
Well, nothing, I think, significant or substantive, and certainly nothing on the question of waiving some of these young people to adult court, and that Noblesville school shooting thing, that's basically dead this year. But one of the problems that wasn't really addressed directly in the roundtable, John, is that some of these things take lag time, and when you need time to assess where you are and where you think you need to be headed, that's not necessarily consonant with the legislative process, which is often reactive. When you've got a single incident that really galvanizes public opinion, like the Noblesville school shooting, the Richmond school shooting, those kinds of things, you want to respond. You want to show the public that you're doing something about it, and they want action. But that's not necessarily conducive to good public policy, and again, it's
nor to good fiscal policy, and there's simply no money for these.
Well, we don't know. You know, it may be that moving people out of the system saves money, and we thought that we were saving money the way that we did it, but you know, again, the local government officials are saying, as you heard Sheriff Mellinger say, you know, hey, you're balancing your back on the local governments again, just like you did with the property taxes and all that. But hey, if it's out of sight, it's out of mind to state lawmakers.
Pushing on down the line there. On the subject of criminal justice reform, and I guess this may be a stretch, but not necessarily, hate crimes legislation, bias crimes legislation, back in the news.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got something that's not a list in the House, kind of came out in a one-day deal, essentially. And it came out of a closed caucus meeting of House Republicans, and did not get any kind of public testimony, amended on the floor without any public input. And there's a strong chance that it will see a concurrence vote from the Senate, which means you won't even have a conference committee with the opportunity, again, for public input and at least some kind of hearing.
So then it comes down to the governor to say, this isn't what I want.
And he's kind of been on both sides since this one particular amendment was added in the House. You know, initially he was saying, well, this is okay. And then the next morning it was, well, you know, if there's still time in the process to amend this.
All right. Well, we will watch and see what happens. Ed, as always, we appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House coverage. Until next week, take care.
What if an app could give a voice to children silenced by autism? It can. Introducing SpeakAll. To learn more about this and more than 400 other world-changing Purdue technologies, visit otc-prf.org.